Okay, we're talking about building this leadership ministry team, and I think what we're really talking about here is the students who are really need to be challenged to be leaders, or they already are leaders, and we're trying to figure out how do you pull these people together, form them into a team, and then what do you do with them? And so the first question, John, is how do you know, and what do you figure out when a student is ready to assume a leadership responsibility? So how do you figure out who's ready to be a leader?
You're going to answer these two, right?
Maybe.
I didn't know this was the setup here. That's what he gets as being the leader, and I get to be as being the assistant. Well, what I do is I look and see who's around. Well, first thing I do is pray and ask God to give me leaders. And then I look and see who's around, who's been hanging around a lot, who's around all the time, who comes to everything, who's real supportive, who's on my team, that doesn't mean they're not willing to be, you know, critical of some of the things we're doing, not in the sense of being of criticism, but being willing to analyze things. But they're around. They've bought into what you're doing, and they want to see something happen. So the first thing I do is see if they're around. If they're not coming around, they can't be leaders in your ministry. Second thing I look for is, after I see that they're around, then I look and see. Well, let me say, there are two ways I do this. First, I see who's around. Then I see who are the students are following. Who are the leaders in the group, the natural leaders who are already there? Then out of those two groups, I see, well, which one of those natural leaders is around, the ones the students are following? Because you don't want to pick people who aren't around. They may be great leaders, but if they're not around, they're not where. They may, next week, they may lead them to another group. And so first I look at who's around. Second, I look at who are the leaders, because there's a lot of people who are hanging around, but they're not leaders. And if you make them leaders in your group, you're going to lose the sharp ones. And I hope this isn't misunderstood, but if you'll get the leaders in leadership, those who are naturally followers are going to come in. But if you get the followers in leadership, you lose the leaders. They're not going to come. They're not going to buy into what you're doing. It seems like God has gifted some people to really be the leaders. And those are the ones that you really want. And so I begin at that point. Then I try to figure out where they are in their walk with the Lord. And I don't do these in, these are all, I haven't really sat down and figured them out in a numbered concept, but these are all sort of together. They all sort of have to fit together in order for me to be willing to put them into leadership. The third one is, are they mature in their walk with the Lord? And what I mean, they don't have to have everything together, but are they moving on with the Lord? If they're not, and they've been around all the time, and they're a leader, but they're not moving on with the Lord, they're not a leader. They're not the type of leader that you want in to lead out in your ministry. So I guess the big three things for me is, number one, are they around and are they supportive and are they on the team? Number two is, are they a leader among their peers? Do the peers perceive them as someone who's a leader? And number three is, are they really leading out in their walk with the Lord? Are they desiring to walk with God and working along that line? Not that they have all the answers, but moving along that line. So those are some of the things.
Okay. One thing that comes to my mind that he didn't mention is their desire. Do they want to?
Yeah.
Do they want to do this? Or is that just something I want them to do? And in 1 Timothy 3, it says, if anyone aspires to the office of elder, he aspires to a noble task. And so the whole issue of personal desire or ambition is biblical for leadership. Okay, what else has come to your mind that sort of flashed up in addition?
One thing I admired about Linda that I would have never known before having worked with her, but it's just the whole aspect of where is a person emotionally, because I know she's had to keep some people from climbing the ladder, so to speak, because they have really had something in their life that they needed to deal with, even though they were a natural leader and they were around and it appeared as though you know, their walk with God was going on. And I mean, we see people in our ministry that way. And John, I know you've had to do that too. And so, but I don't know how you would discern where you would draw the line. Like, this person is capable of handling ministry while they deal with this, or they need to deal with this and not have a ministry. So maybe somebody has ideas about that. I don't know.
I had a student who was in leadership for a couple of years, and he just cratered.
I mean, it was like, I mean, the guy was almost too good for a couple of years in leadership, and then the third year he just cratered emotionally. And all that was there before, but I think sometimes it's hard to discern that because their defense mechanisms are so well in place, and they've, you know, they've got all these supports around them, that a lot of times you've got to put them in pressure-filled situations. I know one of the things that Harold Bullock taught us when we were at Hope was, one of the things mission trips are real good for is it takes the students out of their context and puts them into another context in which you, and then you watch them in that situation, or you take them and you work on a house, or you, you do something menial with them, and you see how they relate to each other, and you really see better who they are. And so sometimes on a mission trip or something like that, you can do that if you have the time to do that. And a lot of times you don't, you think you've got it figured out, and you just roar on, and then all of a sudden they fall apart. And if that happens, I'm not really sure you've necessarily made a bad choice, because you may really be able to, that may be the first point in which you'll really be able to help them, if you don't freak out.
Yeah, Jesus did have one guy that cratered after a couple of years.
Second one almost did, Peter.
Yeah, all of them did, actually.
Yeah. But sometimes you, I don't think you can see it. But.
Yeah. Okay, next question. How do you go about, and I've got, this is, this question has three parts. Determining what their responsibility will be, getting them committed, and training them. And that's kind of a three-step process to the whole thing. How do you determine what you want them to do? How do you pull a commitment out of them? And how do you train them, or do you?
Oh, I know. Why don't you answer that one? I mean,
okay.
We do this sort of every other.
Oh, you're too egalitarian here for me.
Be quiet for a while.
I would say that their responsibility, it kind of depends on where your ministry is. And it, I would determine what their responsibility is based on their gifts and abilities. I want them to function in their strength. We had one guy this year that is a total bozo, but he is super, super, super at bringing new people. He could not lead his way out of a Bible study if his life depended on it. He's dyslexic. He can't read. And so leading a Bible study is extremely difficult. He is illogical. And but he, that we don't have a better people recruiter. And I wanted him to be a part of leadership, and he was. He's the weirdest guy I've ever worked with. And he brought along so many people. And so I matched his responsibility to his ability, rather than saying, you are going to lead a Bible study and I will kill you if you don't, you know. That I just said, he's never going to lead a Bible study. He never will. I don't think he ever will. But that's okay. That's who he is. That's how God made him. And then getting a person committed to a leadership responsibility. Okay, any other ideas on determining what somebody's responsibility would be? Is gifting and strength, are we all there for that?
Can I say one other?
Yeah.
What's vision?
Vision. And what is it they really have a heart to do with?
Okay.
What is it they have a heart to do? That's good. This is kind of like that, but I think that you have to loosely set up your structure and then see who God gives you. And that's the area you really run with. Right now in the ministry I'm in, I'm trying to determine who we can be on the campus. And a little of that will be determined on who God gives me. It's just like in sports, you know, certain teams in basketball can run the ball. Other teams have to be more defensive-oriented. And it's a lot of times it's dependent on the players you have, if the coach is smart. And so I think that, you know what, Max was talking about last night with the book. I think you need to be willing to some extent, not totally now, because there's some things you've got to continue to do, but to some extent run with the players you have and then pray the rest of them in or develop them in. And I think with a lot of structures, that's impossible for us to do. So.
Okay. Any other ideas? Okay. How do we get people committed to a leadership responsibility? What sort of process do you go through to get them committed to it? I've talked to so many people, several people here this week that have told me the same story. I've heard it over and over again from many campuses of they recruited a leadership team and so many people dropped out before the end of the year. And Brad Sprague was telling me about it from his campus, and he was saying to me, well, maybe we're just demanding too much, and we have, and I, one of the things you, when you're studying this stuff, you realize that the people that are being effective evangelism have moved the starting point way back from where it was 10 years ago. But I'm not sure we've done that with discipleship and leadership. We've kept that as a consistent product. We've said, if you're going to be a leader, you are going to be bum, 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 bum. But we said, evangelism, it's okay for that to be developmental, but not leadership. And so Brad called people to a standard, and they all signed up initially, but they didn't make it. And so Brad and I were talking. We're going to have, after lunch tomorrow, Brad and I are going to, he went to a Rick Warren thing, and we're going to sit around and talk about stuff he learned, 10 things he felt like Rick Warren said about students. You guys are welcome to join us in that dialogue at 1:30 tomorrow around the table. But we were talking this morning about maybe discipleship and leadership should be more developmental than what we've made it.
Stage it.
Say, well, would you be willing to do this little thing and I still consider you a leader? And this little bigger thing and you're still a leader? And this thing, you're still a leader? Rather than this giant thing, and you're a leader. That's something to think about.
We changed ours. I'm on a junior college campus, but we changed ours from semester to semester. And I felt like through prayer, God had given me a sense that they did need to try to get a Bible study group together. But that was not. They were more task-oriented or planning with me the first semester. And I'm dealing with. Two of them had been around, one had never, that was his first time on that campus, but I had known him during the summer. So one thing I did was I changed the standards with them during the course of the year, and I said, you know, I really feel like God has given me a vision to do this in the spring. What do you, and they go, oh, yeah, we think we'd like to, and so they wanted to move with me because God, in fact, they were thinking the same thing, so God had prepared their heart. But one thing I do when I get a commitment, I'm still struggling with people, I've had people drop out, is I tell them why I ask them. Maybe everyone else does that too, but I say, look, you know, God says, and what I really am doing is sharing a vision of ministry, and I say, you know, to disciple people, to spend time with people and invest in them, they need to be faithful, available, and teachable. You know, and I've watched your life. You've been faithful. So as they're coming in, they know they were not chosen because of their charisma or because students like them or blah, 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 blah. I say, you know, you are faithful, and I've watched your life. So I think when they're going in, they have a better picture of what it means to be a leader than I'm going to be the president, you know, because we still did have a president. But, you know, I said, I don't really consider you the president. I just consider you a servant that's been faithful.
Okay. Getting them committed. Other ideas?
One of the things you can do is let them decide what the commitment level should be. If they decide that going in, then they're buying into their own thing, not yours. And so I found a lot of times with groups, I'll ask them, I'll say, guys, what do you think ought to be required of this group? And usually they'll set the standards higher than I would have set them in the first place. But since they set them there, then they feel committed to it, and they feel horrible if they back out because they were the ones that set them. So letting them set them up front helps out a lot of times.
Okay.
Brett, when I was in Lincoln, you made a comment that we need not to be angry with students today who are not committed because they've not been taught that. Could you comment on that?
Yeah, I kind of referred to that, I think, when I was talking, that it's real easy for us to get angry. And I've heard from directors in Kansas, Nebraska, at our directors' meetings, I'm hearing an increased anger at students that I didn't hear years ago because they're just not making it. They're just not meeting our standards. They don't care, and it makes me mad. And this generation knows nothing of commitment. They've never had it in dating relationships. They've had sex with X number of people. They don't know it in their family. They've had X number of stepfathers, mothers. They don't know commitment when it comes to jobs and working. They'll change jobs. They don't know commitment when it comes to majors. They'll change majors, da, da, da. You know, they are not a focused, committed, naturally. They don't have committed flesh. And just the whole flesh is not... Right. It wasn't. It wasn't. In other words, they're just not naturally committed to anything. And so when we try to call them to maybe the first commitment of their life and then just expect them to jump through our hoops, we're just not... We need to look at them as, again, developmental.
Didn't you say earlier today, though, Brett, that they're into short-term projects? So that's why I say, would you, this semester, and that's about as short-term as I can get. You know?
Well, I think they would want it to be shorter than that.
We've done shorter things than that. We've had people commit to things for 4 weeks. And one of the things that we found is that if you have them commit, like, say, to a Bible study for 4 weeks that they're going to lead, and you stop the study when it's going well on a positive note, that they the next time you start up a study, they say, oh, great, and they want to be a part of it. But if you drone on for, say, a semester, and the last thing they remember from the study was, my gosh, I was getting tired of that. And then the next semester you say, you want to be a part of a study? They say, no, well, I think I'm busy.
Yeah,
so, you know, with a shorter term type thing like that, with like a 4 week, 5 week thing, you leave on a positive note, then they feel better about themselves. They've been a success, and so they move on from there.
Good. One thing that maybe we want to, this really is a broader thing than just this question, but I think it's good for us to keep in mind that we are really here to serve these students, and their role on this is not to serve our program or to serve our ministry, but even the leadership, and maybe especially the leadership and ministry teams are there, you know, we're there to serve them, and so we want to structure everything according to what best serves them, not what best serves us.
That's right.
I mean, I got a couple thoughts.
Okay.
thoughts here. A few things that have helped me are, first is that I really communicate that the leaders get special privileges. The leaders are the ones that I put up in front of the group. I have special trips that they get to go on. If they'll buy into the ministry, I'll buy into their lives. I commit to them. I'll tell them that in the meetings. You know, when we're talking about being a ministry team or leadership team, I'll talk to them and I'll say, now, what this means is I'm going to commit to you first above everybody else. That my door is always open to you. That I'm going to commit my life to helping you walk with Jesus. And then I give them special privileges. I don't look to other people to lead my meetings. I look to them to do it. Does that make sense? And so they give and I give. They're committed to me. Well, I'm going to be committed to them because they've bought in.
What I thought of, John, was you are modeling what commitment is.
Yeah.
You're saying, I am committed to you. Now, let me show you what commitment is. I'll demonstrate.
One of the things that you said that you were doing at the junior college, I think it's really important that we help them see what we've seen in them. When we go to them and talk to them about leadership, I think we should tell them, this is why I'm asking you to be a leader, because you are a leader. You've done da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And man, you ought to see them. They just kind of, oh, really? And then another thing I try to do is visualize for their life, because nobody's vision. Their mom and dad are so busy trying to make money, if they have a dad, if they have a mom. The teacher just sits down, you know, you're going to flunk this class probably. And nobody's visualizing for their life. And see, I think Jesus visualized for the guys' lives and the people's lives. And we need to do that with our leadership. So we need to be desperately committed to them more than they're committed to us, really. And
I wonder sometimes if that's not the reason people drop out or move away. They don't feel they're really special.
Right.
Or they do
abuse. And I think they need to feel special and loved. And that's what we ought to try to do. But we should visualize for them. You know, I could see you. I can see you. You don't blow baloney at them. They know that. But I can see this for you. And I see you as really being one of the major cogs in this ministry. And so whatever you feel good about there, and I think that causes work on your part that you need to sit down and think about them. I remember Seth Gatchel took us through a deal when we were home fellowship leaders in Fort Worth. He said, now what I want you to do is, for the next blank amount of minutes, I want you to spend 2 minutes on each person in your home fellowship and think about their life. Where are they? What do they have? What do they have going? What's going right for them? What's not going right for them? And then we were done. We thought about everybody for 2 minutes. And he said, you're probably one of the only people other than their mother that's thought about them this long in their life. And boy, I just was like, great. You know? And so a couple other things. I think... you should show them how being on the leadership team will help them. Let them know how that will help them. And if it's not helping them, you ought not be doing it. I mean, that's the point. You know, you brought that out so well. We ought not be doing it if it's not helping them. If it's just helping us, then we need to find something else to do. Don't expect no problems. What I put down is not right. Don't expect to not have problems. People are going to, after you've told them they have to go on this retreat, somebody's going to show up and say they can't go. And I think you should hold them to that commitment. I think that they need to make a decision either to get on or get off at that point. You should not let them stay on and not go, unless they've got a real valid reason. That's my opinion. I think that that's the point. And if that means you've got 3 people instead of 5, well, if you have the 5, what do you have?
Yeah.
So, and that's something you have to come to yourself. I think you should break down their tasks for them. Don't just give them a task of leading the Bible study and not break it down for them. I think you need to show them how to do it. You don't expect them to know how to do it. I mean, it would have scared me to death. If I'd have come to OU and somebody told me to go out and lead a Bible study, I'd have died. I'd been gone. I was a brand new Christian. You know, you had to find me in a rock somewhere. I think you should team them. Don't be afraid to team them in a Bible study or team them in a project. I know that we used to send them out, you get your own team, you know, but I'm not sure we're at that day now. I think that people are a lot farther back than they were. And when I came to college, I was lost as a ball in tall grass. And I had a long way to go. And I just couldn't do it. And a lot of times, well, if you can't do it, grow up. You know, and it all depends on if you want to be, I think it all depends if you want to be success, what you have determined success as. And then the last, that's all I've got.
Okay. What kind of feedback do you provide your leaders? What kind of feedback do you provide them?
Did you deal with part 3 of that?
Well, kind of training them to fulfill their responsibility. We'll maybe come back to that one.
Are you going to a new question?
Yeah, this is a new question. What kind of feedback do you provide for your leaders? Right. Want to speak to that?
When you say feedback, do we mean how they're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've got a little sheet here that I use that I meant to get copied for you, and I just blew it. And you come up with this. This isn't any big thing. But each week I had them fill out this sheet. They came to the meeting with this filled out, and I know that sometimes this causes some of them to lie.
We'll pass it around.
But it was just a tool in which... And I looked at it. What's that? Okay, what's on the sheet is it has has areas here, and I had some areas on here that I felt like if they were going to be in leadership, these were areas that I felt like were really non-negotiables. Number one was scripture memory, quiet time or daily quiet time, prayer, hour studied, and listen to a tape. I had a tape listening list that they needed to listen to because I felt like I couldn't get everything in their life myself. I didn't need to. And so I'd give them a tape every week that they would listen to, and they rotated them around in the group. That may or may not be the best way to do it. Probably not, because you count on them bringing it back to the group, and that doesn't always happen. And then I had a blank down here of something that they just wanted the group to hold them accountable for. They set their own goal, but I would help them with that. I talk about goals. I try to I try to meet them where they are. For you to tell someone to have a quiet time every day, some people aren't having a quiet time at all. And number one, if you set your goal at 7, you can't ever win, you can only lose. I mean, you may say, well, you're supposed to have it every day. Well, you are, but not everybody's, and people need to see progress, they need victories, they need to win. So, you know, you don't set it at 1, but if they've only had 1, then you set it at maybe 3. And you try to bump them up. Now, some of you may disagree with me on that's okay. Then I've got, they set their own goals here, and it has every day of the week here. They set their own goals on all of these areas. And then I would get them in and look at them, and then I get with them individually and talk to them about their goal. If their goal wasn't what it ought to be. Anyway, you know what, you get the gist of it. Then I just had them write out the scripture they memorized, and then just some ideas on the tape, what had hit them about the tape, make them think through it. And then this hour studied here, they're students. They're supposed to be in school. You'd be surprised how little some students study. And they flunk out. And you don't want your leaders to flunk out. Yeah, I got in BSU and flunked out. So anyway, I'll pass this around. This is one of the ways that I would have a source to give them feedback.
Okay. Has anybody found something, a way of observing them actually doing their stuff? And how would you give feedback on that?
One thing I heard about was this group that were leaders, when they accomplished something, like if they all had, if one of them had a quiet time for 30 days, they gave a party. So some accountability is celebrated.
One way to give them feedback, I think, is if you've not looked at the one-minute manager, he talks about a 30 second praising, or anyway, he's got it broken down. One part of it is a praising, and you become intentional in praising people with your words. And I think that kind of feedback is really valuable to this generation of students in terms of motivating them. And so find things to praise them for and use words to do that. He talks about words and touch and eye contact, and how with a student, a good way to give positive feedback is just, you know, to and be sincere about it, of course, but just to touch him on the shoulder, look him in the eye, and just say, you know, you did a good job on that, and just look at it, just penetrate him with your eyes, and that would just do so much to communicate God's love to these students. Because they probably did 3 things right and 4 things wrong, and they don't remember the 3 things they did right. And they need this positive feedback. And that's something that is a discipline for me. So as I think of these students, you know, what can I do to really praise them? And I tend to be just naturally probably can communicate more negative stuff. Well, you need to do this and this. And I forget to tell them, well, you're already doing these 5 things great. Don't let the fact I said you need to do these 2 things get you down. It's kind of what John was saying about winning, making them winners, because they really are. Other ideas on feedback.
Doesn't that mean
feedback?
You know what's going on with them?
Yeah.
That's where I mess up.
How do you know?
I just don't know how well it's going. And they may be drowning sometimes, and man, they're going down for the 3rd time before I ever get around to picking them out of the water.
Yeah. I've really learned a lot from this Bozo guy I've been working with. He is a pro at praising people, and he is just great. He will come to me and tell me about people in the Bible study and tell me to go tell them they're doing good. And he is just a coach. And that's another thing in giving feedback, coaching your students to be encouragements to each other. And boy, I'm so glad just, in some ways this guy was in our ministry.
Just what you're mentioning there, saying something to someone else can make a real difference, as far as those kind of comments always tend to work their way back to the people, mm-hmm. negative or positive.
Yeah.
And so if you say, you mention those things to other people, then when they get around to them, that gives that student real feedback, because they think, oh, that person thought that, you know, and so that gives them a lot of things that, or in front of the group, just to sometimes just call attention to something that someone has done. And it may just be a little thing, it may just be like you said, a 30-second thing, that you say, well, we can, you know, we're really appreciative of this, and the reason this went on was because this person took care of it over here. Well, that also spoke to everyone else in the group. I didn't take care of it over there. That guy did. And, you know, it allows them to know, you know, I need to start taking care of it. So it reminds people as well.
You talked about in your talk about students wanting feedback. Do they only want positive feedback, or is there room where they want and need negative feedback? Because, like, for instance, I know Carl Nyquist's wife went to a Bible study, but the girl did initiate it. But, you know, and so she gave her, you know, she prefaced it with positive feedback about how she did. But she also gave feedback on, well, you know, here's a question you could have followed up on and really had a good discussion. Or so do they want
or need? How did the girl respond to that?
She wanted it, so, and she initiated Marilyn going. But should you go to their ministry and actually see how they're doing and give them feedback?
Okay.
To that.
What do you guys think?
Invited.
I would scare them to death if I went, just because I'm the heavy, you know. But.
I think you've got to earn the right to do that. You've got to make investments in people's lives before you can write a check like that. I kind of see that like a bank account. And I'm investing in this person's life. It's like making deposits. Because I know there's some time when I'm going to need to write a check. And if I'm not willing to write the check, then I'm also not a good leader. But I think first you got to earn it. And I think you earn it by how you love them and you sacrifice for them. But then also I think you do it privately. I don't think you do it in the group. And probably all of you know that. That's real obvious. But I think you do it privately in your private time with them. You talk with them about it. And I think how you couch it is, too. This is what you're doing right. This is what you're doing wrong. I don't think you say that. You know, this is what you're doing right. And you might think about blank and blank and blank. And that, I think how you couch it. Because a lot of our people now are running around looking for somebody to tell them they're all right.
Yes. Like I said, this girl initiated Marilyn. So
I think
probably, it
gets back again to authenticity in your life. If you're willing to hear truth yourself, then they'll be willing to receive truth from you. If, however, you're right about everything, then they don't want to hear from you. But if you're vulnerable and if students can come and say, gee, or you go to them and say, you know that, I bombed. It was terrible. I can't believe it. Wasn't that the worst talk I've ever given? I want to just finish after my first sentence. Did you feel that way about it too? And they're going, yeah. And so if you can somehow be authentic about your stuff and your failures, I mean, nobody here scored 100% on all your public meetings in front of your students. You blew it.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, but what do you do with that? Do you just beat yourself privately? Or do you go to your leadership and go, what can we do? What, you know, and just really tell them what a bozo you were tonight, you know. Dale, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I wanted to mention something that John started while he was at UNM, and it's an effective tool for positive feedback, and that's the gossip the good time. I don't know if you're doing that in your groups or not, but they their ministry team has a gossip the good time, and that's an opportunity for anyone on the team who wants to speak a positive word about something they either saw someone on the team or in the BSU do during the past week. And it's amazing. They'll go until finally we have to just say, all right, we're finished. But that sends a lot of strokes out that are positive, mm-hmm. and word always gets around, and it builds the feelings for the entire BSU.
It's incredible.
I'm just going to say that. That's
great.
That's
sorry.
Do you have a time where you get your leadership together and you actually evaluate the event?
The whole issue?
No, your leadership.
Your leadership.
Oh, I always evaluate everything. But the next meeting we show up for, I always try to evaluate what we did. And try to make that a regular thing to where they're just prepared to do that. Let's just talk about what did we do right. I always start off with what really went well. Where did we really hit the ball out of the park? And then I'll say, what can we do different next time? So I always try to do that.
Okay.
I think when you're overscheduled, you overschedule out evaluation. That's one of the first things you get rid of in your ministry if you're going too fast or you're trying to do too much. And it takes a lot of time to evaluate. And when you first start opening yourself up to do it, it is really scary and it's tough. Johnny Pons, who's at Penn State, I wish he was here because he's been there 1 year and he had his students evaluate his performance this year. You ought to ask him about it. I can't give you any details. Johnny was not prepared for the honesty with which these Northeastern students came to him, but I think he'll be a better BSU director next year because of it. I don't know. I didn't ask him those questions.
Do you think we'll ought to do that?
I don't know.
I mean, you
that's
know,
a good idea.
There's
yeah.
a point in which you set yourself up, though. Yeah. Isn't there a point where you set yourself up to be analyzed? I mean, you got to be prepared because you're going to get analyzed by some people who are ignorant.
Yeah.
Who haven't bought into your ministry, who maybe don't even know what's going on. I'm not saying we shouldn't do it. I'm just saying I think you ought to proceed with caution.
I did.
And there's another thing you got to be careful when in an evaluation. People will always, almost always go to the negative.
Yeah.
And you've got to be, but you've got to be there to help them to see the, that's why I always start with what did we do right. Because not only you are going to get thrown in the toilet on that, some of your students are going to also. And so people have a tendency to be negative. And I'm not saying not to do it. I'm just saying you better be prepared, prayed up, and ready to go and secure. Because people are going to have a tendency to go to the negative, and you got to pull them to the positive.
See, I always do that with my students. I want to know the negative and the positive of myself and also of our BSU. And that way, see, the students give their ideas of what they want to see next year. And they also tell me what I've done, you know, right. And I told them, give me good and bad. I said, just don't dog me, Chris. You know, and so that has really helped our ministry. You know, we have gone from 6 to 30 in a matter of a year.
And if the leader really wants feedback, then I wonder, too, should you encourage the student to seek feedback from the people that they are ministering to? Like, I mean, I wouldn't encourage Bible study leader to try to get feedback from their Bible study, but it might be a good idea, but I've got to first be willing to seek their feedback of me. But, I mean, that may be another source of feedback we haven't even talked about is not us giving it to them, but them seeking it out from the people they've tried to minister to. If they want feedback, and what kind of feedback do they want?
Also, with them giving, you know, me my evaluation, I also can turn the card on them too, you know, as leaders and so forth. So it's almost
You want to always have a few trump cards to use.
I'm talking about you.
I'm glad you shared that.
Do you recommend that you build parameters?
I don't recommend anything in this area. I'm just learning, you know. I mean, I'm just trying to survive this one.
I think once you get feedback, you've got to do something with it, or you breed discouragement.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you better be prepared. Once you get it, you need to be prepared to either help them know why that can't change, because I might be one of a dance. I can't have a dance.
That's
if
one
we have
of
a dance, the John
Strap
is on Memorial Dance. And I need to help them. Well, I think we need to help them with why we can't do certain things and how we can do other things, but I really agree. You need to get, so I didn't want to sound like I didn't agree with that. I just think there's some parameters you need to map out before you get in there. It could be a free-for-all.
You can have an aerobic party.
if you have like a...
Where are you at? I gotta be careful. You can move your top part of your body, but if you move your feet, you're in trouble. You move them together. No, just kidding.
If you have like assistant Bible study leaders or something, sometimes they can provide feedback to the leaders that are in the Bible study, because a lot of times when they go in, they just have the one perspective. Like, they'll walk out, they'll think, oh man, I blew it. And the assistant can say, oh no, I don't think it was really that bad. You know, there was this point over here, and so they can provide feedback that gives a different perspective. Sometimes just one perspective is very dangerous.
Okay, let's move on to another question. And we're starting to address these things and overlap them, so the question can go faster. Do you have a...
You guys are moving on too quickly for me, but admonishment is such an important part of the body of Christ. And you know, if we're always giving students just the positive, then we're really not being authentic, because they screw up a lot, too. And there was one student that we had in particular that was a key leader in our ministry, and yet he became so critical that he was breeding that throughout the whole group, and we talked to him about it. But finally, we got all of our staff together, and we called him in, and it was like a, I mean, you'd think it'd been the worst. You'd think it'd been the worst move we ever did as a staff to one student. But he just wept and wept and wept during that meeting. He said, "I've never felt so loved," because he knew that we were vitally concerned with his well-being in the future, because he was just breeding sickness, you know. And he was a leader, and he wanted someone to point that out to him and to let him know, you either get some things right, or you're done, you know. And so I think it's important to admonish, and you know, I am in the group, and you know I've had a reputation at times of being the hatchet man, you know, and if I get an appointment with you, you're in trouble, you know, and that, you don't want to have that kind of reputation, you know. But at the same time, students have appreciated me in evaluations of me because they never have to guess what I'm thinking, you know, about what they're doing or where they're going. Because if they're, you know, if they're screwing around, they know they're screwing around. You know, if they're doing good, they know they're doing good. And I never go in and if I want to nail them, you know, I don't try to think of 10 things good that they're doing so I can nail them in this one thing. I just go in and nail them in one thing, you know, and they don't like that meeting at all. But then they know whenever I tell them something good, that I'm not going to follow that with a hammer, you know, and tell them something bad, you know. And so I try to keep meetings, you know, if I have an appointment, it's either good or bad. And I found that to be helpful.
Yeah, personally, I'm just learning about this stuff. I feel like I've just not been tuned in to life at this point of feedback and speaking truth. I think I would tend to be imbalanced in the past probably 5 to 8 years on the side of just being Mr. Pillsbury Doughboy, you know, and not really having any strength in moving toward people, not really having any strength of Christ to move toward people. So we want, you know, there's a book that Howard Butt wrote called The Velvet Covered Brick, and that's a good image that we need that softness. But we also need to stand for something. We need some kind of strength. And I'm just learning. I really am. I don't know a lot about this.
Now, one of the things they tell you in children's books is that when you see the right thing happening, you really cheer them. And so when I see the right thing happening, that's when I really try to cheer them.
Yeah, in this 1 minute manager, you have 1 minute goal setting, 1 minute reprimands, and 1 minute praisings. That's kind of how they break it down. They tell you how to do all of those. But the 1 minute praisings is based on when you catch somebody doing something right. And you look for people doing something right, you catch them doing something right, and then you praise them for doing something right. And we're usually focused on catching somebody doing something wrong. But they do talk about the 1 minute reprimand. You didn't show up at our leadership team meeting. I was so disappointed. And what I thought was, you're better than that. You really are. You're more committed than that, this ministry. What happened? And so Chris tells me what happened. I go, did you think about coming to the meeting? Did you just blow it off? I thought about it. I thought, well, they don't need me. Chris, you were wrong. We needed you. You are needed here, and you are better than that. You know, did you think that was sin? Do you think you sinned against this group? And see, to come at Chris with a specific 1 minute reprimand, but yet I'm saying to him, you're better than that, brother. Your commitment's higher than that. Rather than going and sliming somebody out, you know, that's what we tend, instead of being positive in our reprimands, to slime people, and they got to go decontaminate before they can feel like they can re-enter the body. Does that make sense?
Affect the issue and not the person.
Yeah. And I've learned some stuff. You might, at your public library, I bet you every public library has a tape section, and they have Blanchard's 3 tapes on the 1 minute manager, and he has a 45 minutes on 1 minute goal setting, 45 minutes on 1 minute reprimands, and 45 minutes on 1 minute praising. It's worth your time. It's cheaper than going to the seminar.
Well, one thing you said earlier about praising people, if the only time that you do call them in is when they've done something wrong, then it is probably better to speak something good that they're doing as well as something positive. But if you're calling them in and speaking positive things to them and then calling them in and speaking negative things to them, you probably don't have to couch it near as much. But if the only time they have any interaction with you is just on that, then you have to couch it a little bit more. But if you're really making a good effort to be positive, and sometimes just be positive, but to do that, and then, you know, you can call them in and be more straightforward.
But you guys meet individually with, I mean, what, I don't understand this call them in. Like, I have a weekly appointment with my leadership, so everyone else has that, right? I mean, you already are.
Okay, that was my next question. How do you go about meeting their personal and spiritual needs? Martha meets individually every week with your leaders for how long?
An hour, 45 minutes to an hour.
And what do you do during that time with them? Not specifically, but generally.
Generally, I go over the tasks that they're assigned. I find out how it's going. And I just chit-chat with them for a good part of the time. Sometimes I pray with them.
Okay. All right, Troy, what do you do with your leadership? How often do you meet with them? And
It depends on what leader, type of leader we're talking about. You know, there's a certain set of leaders that we have in the group that I meet with every week. But then there's a whole range of leaders that there's no way. You know, we had 55 students on leadership team, you know, this last semester, and I feel responsible to every single one of those leaders in some way or another, you know, to meet with them and to be involved in their life. And you know, those would be more the ones that I wouldn't be in contact with their life every week for an hour a week, but their contact in the group is vitally important to me being in some kind of contact with them, and the effect and the impact that they're having on the group is important enough that they will get my time, but it's not always on a weekly basis.
Okay, on your leaders, how many would you meet with a week? And then what do you do with them during that time to minister to them?
Okay, we have our leadership team broken up into different types of tasks, and our staff meets with the different types of leaders. And my particular group of leaders are the fellowship group leaders. And so we evaluate, you know, how the fellowship groups are going and the kinds of things that they're doing. And we use our leadership team as a shepherding tool. And that's the time that we really try to impart wisdom to them. We try to help them, you know, gain clear understanding of the scripture principles and, you know, hold them accountable to some of those basic things that John has said there. You know, what kind of things are you doing? Who are you ministering to? You know, who's in your Bible studies? Where are they in their life? Those type of things.
Okay. And so an hour, would you pray with them during that time? Would you do Bible study? What kind of methods do you use? Just sit around and talk with them and drink a cup of coffee or what?
Well, we meet as a group.
Okay.
And we do all of those things that you mentioned. You know, we pray, we study the scriptures, we fellowship together, we share each other's lives, you know, what's going on. But then in the one-on-one time, that's really time where we just talk, you know.
Okay.
We just kind of ask some key questions.
Right. Anybody else want to talk about what you do with your leaders? Any different stuff?
I try to find out where they are personally. I try to find out some things that they'd like to see in their life. And I try to just, the first time I meet with them, I try to figure out, you know, what types of things would you like to see happen in your life? Where are you? What's going on? And then I kind of keep a little bit of a running list of what's happening, and I kind of try to check up on them on that. And then I have some things that I just want to make sure they're doing, that they're growing in their character and their walk with God and things like that.
Okay.
Does anybody know the good resources if you were to go through any curriculum to develop your students spiritually that you recommend? You know what I'm saying?
Well, I know, like, we're the old BSU Council has a lot of stuff that in there that you can use on, you know, just helping them develop spiritual Bible studies they can do. It also prepares them if they normally have not not used to leading a Bible study. It gives them that thing too. And just some personal things about, like I know, like with my students, I was telling you that, and he just mentioned that about my president this year is dyslexic. And I'm dyslexic, so we have that in common. We talk about that. And, you know, very, it's a very sharp guy. So we just, you know, a lot of things that we talk about one-on-one with our students that they all in common.
Going along with what John was saying, first, I just meet with a certain number of the ministry team. We've got three different ministry teams right now, or leadership groups, and that's 28 people, and I can't meet with all of them. And so I've chosen about 6 to 8 that I'm spending time with. I say 6 to 8 because a couple are in and out. And the first thing I do is I ask them, what do you want to see happen during our time? And then they tell me that, and then I say, here's what I'd like to see happen during our time. Now you pick one out of both of our groupings, and that's what we'll work on for the semester. And what I've found over and over again is that what they choose and what I choose are going to be the same. Because what I'm looking for is patterns in their life. And that's, I want to speak back to the last question, which is the reprimand, or how do you know what to say? And if they blow it, like, for instance, we had a student act like he was on drugs during an announcement. And I didn't think that was funny. The group loved it. They got off on it. But personally, I was saying, what are we communicating to this brand new student who walked in, you know, on campus? They're having a marijuana sit-in. And here we are acting like we're on drugs here. Well, I knew that wasn't a pattern in his life. So in a real light way, I could just say, look, let's not do that anymore. I love who you are, but let's not do that anymore. Okay? Whereas in this same student's life, there was a pattern going on in his studies. Now, to that I'll speak to that pattern. But the resource that I'm using in the one-on-one times, there's two, and this won't be new to anybody, but I've been liberated with it. And one is His Image, My Image by Josh McDowell. And the second is the Rafa book, Search for Significance. Because in the environment of finding out who they are in Christ, they're open to me talking about patterns in their life. And sometimes I'll go 3 or 4 weeks just asking questions and listening. And then in a walk in the park by myself, the Lord will bring back the whole thing and I can put it in order. And then I'll come back to them with an illustration and say, here's the pattern I see. And then I'll ask them, do you agree with me? And if they say they don't, I go, well, then fine. And we keep working on the chapter. We've got something to do. And if they say, I do agree, normally the book gets planted in the rest of the semester. We memorize verses, we cry together, we talk hard, or whatever.
So then read through these together as a group, and then you talk about it individually?
No, that's one-on-one. That's so that, like, I've got a student who comes in, and 1 week he's happy, 1 week he's ticked. Mm-hmm. And I want to have something to do the week he's ticked, because I don't want to deal with that. And so we go ahead and we've got the book.
Which one?
His Image, My Image. So we've got that to work through. And if he didn't read the chapter, there's a page that we can work through which has questions on it. But if he's in a jovial mood, well then, you know, we can talk straightforward. Those have helped me.
That's a good idea.
I think it's really important that we communicate to our leaders that they're more important than the job they're doing. And I try to tell them that right off the bat. You know, you're more, and there are times when they blow it or something, I'll just tell them, you know, you're more important. And I think you need to decide whether that's true or not. Are they more important than that? And I think God cares more about people than he does about your little place that you're doing your thing. And just a couple of thoughts I had while he was talking was, one is, you know, the relationships that they have in their life, they have to relate to God, they have to relate to their parents, they have to relate to their friends. We need to help them there. And so sometimes a lot, I will begin with a lot of people working on their concept of God, just out of Genesis 34, where Moses, God tells Moses who he is. And then also I'll share with them what's happening in my life. And that just, I think it just helps them. Because when I'm just honest about what's going on in my life, where I'm at, you know, I don't tell them everything, but things I feel like could be helpful to them, I let them into my life. I think that's the door to their life, is letting them in yours.
Those concepts of God's tapes are available, I believe, by Scott Haddon in the tape library if you missed that seminar. I think that's a good...
I think everybody's going to get a set of every tape this week.
Oh, really?
I think so.
Dave Edwards was saying that he has six areas that he tries to go over with people he meets with each semester. And he said they're devotional life, responsibility in all different areas, relationships, evangelism, disciple making, and then perspective. And what their perspective is, how all those relate, how they relate to life. You can get that from him, but he says that what they try to do is, he said you can have a lot of different categories under each one of those areas, or you may just have a few. But with the people he works with, each year they try to hit on those specific areas. They try to deal with some aspect of their devotional life, whether it's extended times of prayer, whether it's quiet times, whether it's just, you know, the whole aspects of devotional life. And then, like, under responsibility, things within their jobs, things within school, things within family, you know, some different aspect of each one of those categories. But it gives him some categories that he can look at.
Do those six categories every week with every person?
No. Those six categories a year. Okay. In other words, during the year. Maybe during one month, you're going to work on one. Okay. During another month, you'll work on another one.
And I have a feeling the way he may do that is in his team meeting. I don't know what you may know, but in his team meeting, he may go over one of those.
Exactly.
So he may not do that individually. He may do it in a team format. But then when he does meet with them one-on-one, maybe go over what you think.
Yes, see, like he may cover devotional life in a team meeting or something like that. And with one person, it may deal with prayer. With another person, it may deal with quiet times. With another person, he may deal with something else. But they're all dealing with devotional life.
Have you seen Billy Hanks 101, mm-hmm. that little sheet? I used to use that with the girls. And you can tell where they are because one of the questions is, what is your praise or prayer that you focus on this week? And they may say, well, I really prayed that I wouldn't cough because I was sitting between two guys I really like at church. And you realize, well, that's where they are. So, you know, let me help that. Where another one is praying for 9 people to come to know Christ in her dorm. So you get an idea of where your leadership is.
Okay.
One of the things you said, Brett, was about imaging. You know, you said that last hour that they mm-hmm. need to see images. And I think we're real high information oriented, mm-hmm. and somehow we got to get images in there. And I think one of the ways to image that is to share your life with them, mm-hmm. what's going on in your life with them.
Okay, we have time for one last question. Since I'm the leader, I will pick the question. How do you deal with one of your leaders who does not fulfill their commitment? How do you deal with them? What do you do when they don't fulfill their commitment? And okay, Chris bags them. Do you field dress them prior to bagging them?
That depends on what kind of leader they are.
Okay.
In our ministry, we have some leaders that are vital. I mean, they are vital to what we're doing in ministry. I mean, they are leaders of leaders. And we work hard with those to help them fulfill, you know, their commitments. And then there are others that, I mean, they just aspire to be leaders and they're just not, you know. And if we set, it's a double standard and maybe it's all wrong, but, you know, we have standards and by some of those standards, some people eliminate themselves. But some leaders, I mean, we see them as so vital to the group that if they're not to the place where they'll live up to those standards, we won't let them eliminate themselves. In fact, we won't lower the standard, but we'll really help them try to meet the standard. Because, I mean, like this Bozo guy, I mean, he's a key leader in your group, and so you have to orient what you're doing, because he so impacts what you do in ministry, the whole group, you have to have him there, because if he goes, lots of other people go, you know, and so that really depends on who or what the leader is.
Okay.
Right. A big part, my whole job is equipping people. You know, if I was going to sum it up in one thing, and like Troy, you've got to do what you've got to do to help them be the person that God wants them to be, and whether they're a leader or a follower or whoever they are. And there are some who will just fail in their commitment, but generally what happens in our ministry is if they really are going to fail, what they're doing is they are opening a door to remove themselves from the ministry. And they're doing it intentionally, and there's nothing you can do to really stop that. But if they're failing in a commitment because I put too much on them, that's my fault. And I need to work with that individual to really help them to be successful at whatever level they're at, and not to push them too far, too fast, or too hard, but at the same time, setting a standard that's worthy, you know, that they can reach. And I think John mentioned success is really, you know.
Yeah, since I've been reading all these parenting books, they say, as a parent, don't require your kid to do something that you're not willing to, you know, back up, that you're not willing to discipline for if they don't do it. So I think almost as a precaution, we can think through our standards and think, you know, are these valid, or am I doing it because it's always been done this way? And am I willing to, are they so important and non-negotiable that if a student doesn't go by them, that it would mean they would, you know, we would find another place for them or something like that. So
I think something that's quite fun is parenting books will help you in student ministry.
Oh, yeah.
Dog obedience books help.
If you haven't read Kevin Huggins' book, Parenting Adolescents, that one is classic. It'll change your life. Might help your students, too.
Huggins?
Kevin Huggins, H-U-G-G-I-N-S.
Talk a little bit about the pyramid of paralysis, too.
Where if you don't extend, if you enlarge your ministry without enlarging your leadership base, your ministry will stop enlarging. That's the pyramid of paralysis. Mm-hmm. And so,
is that statistically proven, or what's the basis?
I think experientially launched. People just get paralyzed and quit.
Yeah, I mean,
do I have a copy of it? It's just something that,
really?
I saw Milt Hughes draw it out. It's a little... Sure. Okay, go ahead and pass
it. I had a comment
on
the day, Brett.
Okay. Sorry about that.
With a particular student I was working with, he had, last school year, been really committed to what we're doing, almost sacrificed, gave a lot. Great guy, natural leader. Came to me at the end of the school year and said, I don't want to be on the leadership team next fall. And but right at the end of the school year, he had quit coming to the meetings. A lot of things had happened. He'd really blown it. Well, I talked to him, and he said, well, I feel like I can't make the commitment. You know, I'm an architecture student. End of the school year, we have a million projects to do. And I just said to him, I said, we have standards, but I want you to know that I'd rather have you be on the team and let's be flexible and work with where you're at than just punt the whole thing. And I think that really, in one moment you just said, yeah, you're right, I'll be on the leadership team. You know, and just being willing to do that really, I think, encouraged him and made him want to, you know, be there.
Let me draw this little pyramid John was asking about. It's a real simple concept. Have you ever done a pyramid? Three guys on the ground. Two guys, one guy on top. Okay? Let's say that you have three or four people on the ground on their knees, but instead of putting three and two on top, you put, you know, 16 and 8 on top. And so you increase the size of your pyramid. What is going to happen to these people on the bottom? They're going to be crunched. And the point is that so often that is what happens to leaders, that what you're doing works, your ministry is growing, and your leaders are dying because they're getting crunched. And so that's a pyramid of paralysis. The alternative to that is you lengthen your leadership and you have the same number of people, involved, but the stress of it is distributed on more people. Okay?
For every task you add a person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Carol was explaining to me that if a person comes up with a creative idea and then they're asked to do that in addition to everything else, that they're afraid of giving you their creative idea any longer because they're afraid that, I mean, they're already overloaded. So that's why it was paralyzing, I guess.
Well, you might even want to take and ask them if they really want to pursue that. You can remove some of what they're already doing and give it to someone else and let them take off with that and go with that. Because, I mean, if people come up with something that they birth as far as a vision or something like that, and you take it and give it to somebody else that it's not their vision, they're liable to fumble the ball all over the place where that other person will take it and run with it, develop.
And back to the original question, I think you need to figure out why they haven't followed through with the commitment, because it may be something devastating that's going on in their life that you could have totally overlooked by reprimanding it for not getting with the system.
Okay. Well, thank you guys for making this a successful deal. John's going to pass out some stuff he brought.
That aren't necessarily the gospel, okay? I mean, they're just some things that have been helpful to me, and maybe you can take them and adapt them for your own situation. And then there's a little cartoon going around that I gave to all my teachers, and I think probably would help with your leaders. It's a Far Side deal, and I think you'll get a kick out of it. I meant to have it copied for you, but the BSU copier, I blew it, and then the BSU copier here died.
It died.
So, but I blew it mostly. So.
When are the other two sessions so we can finish your questions?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I'd like to extend this sometime. Yeah,
real good. Well, we address most all the questions as we, because I put the, up at the top, you know, we sort of had the filter down effect, and so don't feel like you don't know something you need to know.
The sheet that's coming around is the listening list that I had on there. These are just, you know, you've come up with your own. These were just some things that I felt like gave a pretty good cross section of different things for. They're all in the OU library that you can use.
Okay.
Brett, in your efforts to expand your leadership team, I mean, isn't that what do you? I mean, we found that in our efforts to make our leadership team so inclusive that real leaders didn't want to be on leadership team because they saw that a lot of people on leadership team weren't leaders at all. There's, you know, I mean, and they're, you understand what I'm saying?
Maybe. I don't think I really do.
And, you know, that's kind of a scary thought, you know. I mean, maybe we'll learn something good next year. Maybe it'll be a lot easier to do what we're doing.
Well, I think you've got to be careful in your ministry who you call a leader. That we have sometimes had ministry teams that the people on the ministry team had leadership functions, but we did not call them leaders. Because we wanted to save that idea for leaders, for these people over here who really were committed. And the ministry team people were sort of apprentices, or they were kind of getting their feet wet. So rather than a blanket term, all of you are leaders, we said, no, you people are leaders. And there are some years we refuse to call anything we do a leadership team because we don't have any leaders. And so I just...
They would not be
at the place in character and heart and skill that I would want to say, this is what we're trying to produce here, leader.
So what do you call them?
Just ministry team members. And so that has cycled through.
You're not really broadening your leadership base, getting more people involved in that, although that would be the goal. You're getting more people involved in.
Yeah, I'm breaking down the responsibility and giving students responsibility, but I'm not calling them leaders. In other words, and this time Bob and I have talked about Anderson at K-State, people that have been on leadership in our ministry, we want that to be a special thing and not something that just any person who is taking 6 hours of school and has a lot of time to give the BSU that suddenly they can become a leader. That we really want to have a level of commitment, and if we don't, then we will not have a leadership team. We'll do something else. We'll try to bring them along. But every year we just don't go, well, who are the leadership team going to be this year? We go, good night, we aren't going to have a leadership team this year. You know, we're back to square one. Let's go after freshmen again. We didn't get any for the last 2 years. Look at this group. Good grief.
I think this sometimes of the council method. So now I worked in that for a while, and I'm not putting it down. Okay, so don't hear me doing that. But there are sometimes when you just don't have people for those positions. And there are times when you don't have a person who raises above everyone else and becomes the president. And you might have four or five people who are on an equal basis who could equally be the president. And I, quite frankly, I think making somebody a president of BSU is a dangerous situation, because you have just said this guy or this gal typifies what is the very best in all of us. And I don't know about you, but when I was that age, that was really hard, and it was hard to not get that position. And so I would just encourage you, as you work, you choose your method, that you think about what people are really like, and don't just adapt the business model without thinking about whether people are really like that or not in a volunteer organization. So that's just a thought.
This year we kind of restarted our ministry, and when you're in student ministry, you'll find cycles that go through, especially in newer convention area where you don't have this steady influx of believers. And so when Kevin, Shen, and Carl came, we sat around and we finally reached the point of just saying, okay, folks, we're going to try to love and help the people who are here, but these people are not going to reach anybody. Let's face it. They're not going to do it. They don't have the time. They've got personal problems. They've got this. If we had tried to have our ministry through those people and called them leaders, it would have been suicidal. So we just decided we're going to love these people and help them and provide for their needs as best we can. But our ministry is going to be reaching new people. And we're going to be out there. And if we can get any healthy people, we'll get them to go help us reach these new people. And so we didn't have any leadership team this year. And that didn't bother me a bit, because we didn't have healthy people, enough of them to really be leaders.
How did you have 85 show up at that banquet?
How did we do that? Just we had good food and a good speaker. We had some students who really changed. Once they saw us reaching out to people and saw the example, then they began to go, well, I could do that too. But see, if we had sat back here and said, okay, I'm going to equip you to go do it, we would still be equipping them to go do it. We just said, move over.
Right.
We're going to go do it. And we did, and they kind of got into the spirit of it. And four of them this year are going to help be around to help us, and I think they've got a good spirit and a good attitude. But we've got a whole new ministry. And that's the thing in student, if you haven't figured it out, the upside of student ministry is things can grow and get positive real fast. The downside of it is things can fall apart faster than that. That you can, in February, you can think, man, I can't wait till next year. And in May, you can think, oh, God, I've got to leave here. I can't take it. In just 3 months, everything can just erode and go away. And, yeah.
Years.
So.
Months.
Oh. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for this time, for this group. Help us, God. We're just struggling to know what to do. Help us to put these ideas together and to hear your voice. Thank you for the food we're going to eat in a little while and the men that have provided it for us. For it's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.